Tango Tango Papa, 1831, April 5th, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Weilser with you coming to you this evening from Southington, Connecticut. So if you've been following the videos, I've been putting up a video every day, or actually every evening. But in any case, I've been kind of going from Massachusetts. I made a trip down to wherever it was, Virginia, and then now I'm back up in Connecticut, so up and down. So anyway, I have no idea right now. I have no idea that, or I unloaded actually at Rocky Hill, Connecticut. I never heard of that before. But in any case, I unloaded there and then came back over here to Southington. There's a TA truck stop here. And so, taking my break here and kind of waiting on another load. So, we'll just wait and see what they come up with tomorrow. Tomorrow's Sunday. Sunday the 6th. So, I have a couple of audio comments, and then I've got some stuff that I want to talk about. So let's see. Let's go ahead and play the audio comments first. So I got a little short comment here from Joel, and he and I, you know, we're having a Voxer conversation, and it's kind of relevant. So anyway, here's Joel.
Hey, glad you had a good time at home. This is actually coming to you live from a Galaxy Note 3. I'm a convert. Not too bad. I had to tweak some things. Like, for example, that My Magazines thing kept coming up. So I finally figured out how to stop that mess. And then I also wanted to, not that I use S Voice that much. I use actually Google Voice more, or Google Note, Google Now more. So that usually is what I end up using more so far as voice recognition, but I'm liking it so far.
So there was Joel, and Joel got a Galaxy Note 3. So yet another one. You know, I've had mine now for a few weeks, and very, very happy with it. It's can't say enough good things about it. It's a great, great piece of hardware. Really is great. So anyway, and then I've got a much longer comment here from Jeremy. We haven't heard from Jeremy in a while, and I may end up this about a total of about 8 minutes or so, maybe a little longer. And so I don't know if I'll do a start stop on this or not, but anyway, Jeremy, I listened to the first part of this, and Jeremy's talking about getting a phone, but in this case he got an iPhone. So here is Jeremy.
Hey Tom, this is Jeremy checking in after a long hiatus. This is another commute on the way home after work. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're traveling safely, and hope you are prospering. So I know you just got done with a little vacation time. You've been talking a lot about the Galaxy Note. I've just recently switched back to iPhone. I had a Motorola Atrix 2. And Motorola makes some of the worst hardware in the world, I'm telling you. During the time I had that phone, I had it replaced. I had the Best Buy Geek Squad protection, and I guess it's a good thing I did, even though I generally rag on warranty replacement plans. because they usually have ridiculous deductibles, but Geek Squad just happened to have unlimited replacements, and I think that their maximum deductible was something like $30. So I went ahead and signed up for it when I got that phone. And I had that phone replaced with the same model, of course, because that's the way their goofy plan works. That same model, I had it replaced 3 times. So I was on my 4th phone when I finally got out of that contract and upgraded for the replacement iPhone. I will tell you the main reason I went back to iPhone, and it has to do less with the Android stuff than it does with the carriers, because the carriers, they have this sort of closed system, and unless you can afford to get, if you can afford to get a Nexus phone, which again, you know, some of that hardware is manufactured by Motorola up until recently anyway, so I wasn't interested in that either. But if you can get a open Google phone or an unlocked phone that is not tied to a carrier that allows you to get the latest operating system updates, then I can see that you would want to use, that you would want to be able to have Android as a potential option. I found that with any carrier, they add so much of their own stuff to the phone that they make it impossible to uninstall it. This is with Android now. And they also make it so that you can't have the newest version of Android until they go through and add all their little tweaks and their buttons and whistles and blocks and keep you from being able to do certain things like tethering and all that until you go through. This experience is exclusively, you know, that I've had is exclusively with AT&T. As far as I know, Verizon is the same way, that they have their own checks and balances system where they have to vet every release of Android before they'll release it to their phones. And then it's not like it's a system-wide release. There's a specialty there's a special release for each model of phone that's out there. So your phone may or may not make the cut when it comes to upgrading. And so I got really tired of that cycle. And with the Atrix being a couple years old already, it was certainly not getting any updates to Android OS. So I just went back to, I've had an iPad this whole time, and I just kind of went back to that system where, hey, there's a new iOS. Guess what? Everybody gets it the same day. Doesn't matter your carrier. Doesn't matter which iOS device you have, as long as it's technologically capable of handling the newest and the best operating system, then you will have it available over the air. And that is probably the primary reason that I switched back to iPhone. Now, having said all that about defecting from Android back to iPhone, I will say that I am happy to see that Samsung Galaxy is giving iPhone a run for its money. I think Android is also suffering from the same thing that Windows suffers from, which is many devices to one basic operating system that gets modified depending on the device. And that causes a huge disparity among the devices. And performance-wise, there are a lot of issues because you can't necessarily rely on the hardware configurations being consistent. In addition, it also happens to add another layer to the complexity, which is, so form factor is a huge deal. You have so many, you have such a diversity of devices out there, and they all sort of saturate this market where each one of them has a little slice, and that little slice of the market is not enough for accessory manufacturers to kind of buy in. And I think Galaxy S has now just kind of surpassed that point. I think that they've kind of tipped the scales a little bit where they can now compete with iPhone for accessories and you know, just form factor stuff. So they've got the watches that go along with it. They've got other just electronic devices that can pair up with them. And there are companies now that are producing cases and docks and speakers and all this kind of thing that people enjoy for the iPhone, because the iPhone has this just wide user base that makes it something that's monetarily attractive for the producers of those accessories. And there just hasn't been enough traction for a lot of these Android devices where that's possible. The problem is that, you know, a device is very popular at the outset. You might see a few, like a very limited set of accessories available for it. The problem is that there's no staying power there. Those devices tend to be popular for a very short time, and then they burn out. And so anything you get in the way of accessories is going to be a closeout, and you're never going to be able to replace it if it breaks, or if you want a different color option or something like that.
Okay, well, that was a little shorter than what I thought, but anyway, thank you, Jeremy. I understand, that can be a problem if you want the latest and greatest version of the operating system. I don't know. This is my third Android phone. The first one was the HTC Evo, and I think that received, while I had that, I kept that for almost 2.5 years, or about 2.5 years, as I recall, and I think I received an update maybe once or probably twice during the time I had it, and I don't remember which versions of Android. And then I received at least one, you know, during the S3, I received at least one version update for that. And, so I understand that, the idea is if you had an Android phone and you just had the pure Android from Google, then you would get all of the updates as they would come across, and that would, you know, and I kind of understand that, but on the other hand, that kind of thing, you know, the update thing really hasn't bothered me that much. I don't necessarily want the operating system continually updating. Because I don't know, the updates can be nice sometimes. There's always the promise of new features or maybe performance improvements or whatever. But on the other hand, updates can also break things. And often as not, updates do break things. I've had it happen to me a number of different times. Not necessarily in the realm of phones, but in the realm of computers, certainly. Updates have a tendency to break things. Now, I will say that this last update for iOS, whatever it is, I think 7.1 or whatever it is, there's been a ton of people that are complaining that it ruined their battery life, or it caused problems with various applications not wanting to run properly on it anymore, so on and so forth. And so I have not updated my iPad, and I probably, unless I'm absolutely sure that whatever, you know, the next update that Apple comes out with, and unless I'm positive that it's going to really do something that I want, you know, as far as really solve a problem, I'm probably not going to update it anymore. Because the 7.1, I haven't really heard about people complaining about the iPad version of it, but certainly the iPhone version of it has caused a lot of people some problems. And that was certainly true when they went, I think, what was it, from 6 to the original iOS 7, when they came out with that, that caused problems on my the iPad 2. And then, of course, later on, they came out with more updates, and they corrected the problems. So that's, my parents have that, and I told them absolutely under no circumstances update it. Just ignore the, because my mom the other day, I was talking to her on the phone. She said, or she's having a problem. I don't know. She had this weird, they have a MiFi device, is what my parents have. That's how they get their internet. And she was having a problem with her iPad. It was losing its internet connection, and I don't know what happened. Well, at first, see, I suspected, you got that stupid thing that you pull up from the bottom. What do they call it? They call it Control Center. And I think it's a pretty, I know what they're trying to do, because Android has a similar thing, where you pull the thing down and you can turn the Wi-Fi on and off and so on and so forth with the buttons across the top of the screen once you pull that shade down. Well, so Apple, they have, we're going to have this Control Center down at the bottom, and you pull it up from the bottom, and you've got access. You can turn the Wi-Fi on and off and the airplane mode on and off and so on and so forth. Well, my mom, she's 89, she does pretty good with these devices. But in any case, there's been more than once where she's accidentally slid that Control Center up from the bottom and then ended up turning the Wi-Fi off. Or in one case, she turned on airplane mode. She had no idea that she'd done it. And that is, I don't know, if the next time I see them, there's probably some way of turning that Control Center off so that it just doesn't, because it's kind of useless anyway. I know some people like it because they can turn the things on and off and what have you. But on an iPad, it's probably, maybe on a phone I can understand it's more useful to be able to do that, but on an iPad, not so much. So that should be turned off. But in any case, she called me this day before yesterday. She called me and she said, "Well, I can't get any internet on my iPad." And come to find out, she'd accidentally turned on airplane mode, and we got that settled. And then she called me back later in the day, in the evening, and same problem. She couldn't get any internet on it. And but in this case, I talked her through it, and the Wi-Fi was on, and she had a Wi-Fi symbol, yet there was no connectivity. And so finally, I decided, well, we'll just go into the Wi-Fi settings, and we'll delete the Wi-Fi. We'll delete that out of there, and then you got your password, we'll put it back in. Well, I had her delete it, and then all of a sudden it started working. So somehow that thing got, I don't know if it got in there twice, I don't know how that could happen, but somehow once the thing was deleted, then all of a sudden it started working just fine, and it's worked fine ever since. So I don't know what happened with that, but that notification center in version 7 is probably more useful on a phone, not so much on an iPad. So I don't know. Apple, some of those updates are, they can be great, and then sometimes they break things, and that's certainly true in the realm of computers. Let alone mobile devices, it's absolutely true in the realm of computers. So I've never really worried about wanting the latest and greatest version of whatever on my phone. I just want it to work. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it, is my philosophy with updates. So but I understand, people want the latest version, and if there's some kind of security flaw, you want the update to fix it and so on and so forth. It really depends on what's important to you as an individual. But on the other hand, the Android, you know, the Android devices, as you mentioned, you've got a tremendous variety of different devices, you know, from the very low end all the way up to high end devices. And that enables success. Android is a much more open platform, and that's why Windows was successful. That's why Windows dominated for so many years, and it was because it was open. And so then you have disparity. You can have a huge disparity between the low end devices versus the high end devices, and that disparity kind of comes with sort of an open platform, or a more open one. Now Google, is kind of closing down on Android somewhat, and they've kind of taken a little bit better control of the apps that they let in the App Store. Because at one time they weren't paying too much attention, and there were some programs that purported to be something, and it turned out that they were just viruses or even spyware and so on and so forth. So Google has kind of clamped down on that. And so generally speaking, as long as you're careful about what you're doing with Android, and you're not sideloading, quote-unquote sideloading APKs that you're finding, the APK file or the installer files, not sideloading those from where, just anywhere on the internet because you don't know what it is. And that's going to be especially if you've downloaded it through some sort of peer-to-peer system supposed to be a cracked version of a paid piece of software. You run from that like the plague. By default on Android devices, it's turned on so that you can't load those APK files. You have to specifically go in and change the settings so you can load it from anywhere. Of course, on the Apple side, Apple does not give you that option. You have to jailbreak the phone in order to be able to sideload applications. So on the one hand, you have a more open platform, and with a more open platform you have more problems. But on the other hand, you have the other extreme of that is you have Apple, and they've got their tight control, and you get a certain level of security and a certain kind of an experience out of that because of that control. But then again, the control can be, it can kind of be stifling, So I prefer a more open platform, at least for my phone. Now I'm happy, I've got my iPad here. Now at this point, I don't know that I would ever buy another iPad. I don't know that I'd, because as I've talked before, the software is kind of coming up on the Android side. The software, especially the software that you pay for, the apps that you pay for, the quality of those is really catching up, and so it's probably it's going to be possible to kind of. In the not too distant future, you're going to be able to do pretty much anything on an Android tablet that you could do on an iPad, and in some cases you can do more on the Android side than you can on Apple because Apple's got such tight control. I can give you one example. If you want to record MP3 files, you can do it on Apple, on iOS. There's a few apps that'll record directly to MP3, but they have very limited flexibility, and I can do the same thing on Android. I've got an app that records, and I can make as many files as I want, and I can upload them all at once, or I can do whatever I want to with them all at once as a batch. And can't really do that on what I've seen on iOS as far as what records directly to MP3. Can't do that, and that's just Apple, and they've got their rules about what you can do and what you can't do, and it's their way or the highway, so so I don't know. It just kind of depends on what you're happy with, and but I'm pretty happy with kind of having both kinds of devices. So anyway, thank you, Jeremy and Joel. That just goes to show you that not everybody wants the same thing. We all don't want Apple devices, and we all don't want Android devices, or we all don't want the same Android device, so on and so forth. So, I've got an article here, and this is from the New York Post. The title of it is, America Rejoice, Being Fat May Actually Make You Healthier. With swimsuit season right around the corner, a new science-based anti-diet book offers the most enabling advice we've heard this year. Those thunder thighs you hate so much might be key to long life. The Obesity Paradox, that's the name of the book, presents compelling evidence that those with excess baggage might be healthier and better able to fight off disease than normal weight counterparts. Conversely, the thin and unfit waifs have the worst body types for long-term health. Though obesity remains a risk factor of epidemic proportions, say some researchers, more so than smoking or alcoholism, associated with heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and cancer, cardiologist Carl J. Levy argues that we need to rethink what we call fat and what we consider healthy. Levy, a cardiologist at John Ochsner Heart and Vascular Institute in New Orleans, sums it up with one phrase in his book, "Looks can be deceiving." Obesity paradox, the term was coined in 2002 by Dr. Louis Gruberg and colleagues at the Cardiovascular Research Institute in Washington, D.C., when they discovered, to their surprise, that overweight and obese patients had roughly half the risk of mortality than normal weight patients following angioplasty, a procedure to unblock arteries and heart. Levy noticed a similar trend in his patients recovering from heart failure. He published his findings in 2003, where he revealed that for every 1% increase in body fat, there was a 13% increase in overall survival. These findings created an uproar among my colleagues, Levy writes. Unfortunately, the science world was not ready to accept this observation in the early 2000s. But other studies backed the findings up. Overweight and moderately obese people also had better outcomes with other chronic diseases like kidney failure, advanced cancer, and AIDS. The studies are intriguing, but less clear is why. Theories abound. For one, fighting off a disease requires using more energy. Patients who have more fat squirreled away might be at a natural advantage to battling chronic disease. Then there's the role of genetics. While an overweight person might develop, say, heart disease because of his weight, a thin person who develops heart disease is more likely to have developed it because of a genetic predisposition. But, he writes, a thinner person's prognosis would be worse in comparison to a fatter person's due to the power of those genetics. The obesity paradox, though, has had its fair share of critics. Some argue that these studies fail to take into account smokers who are more likely to have lower BMIs. Some point out that the most sick tend to be the thinnest. Levy reports that these criticisms don't explain away the growing body of research that links higher BMIs to increased survival rates. Obesity, defined as having a BMI of 30 or higher, is a crude way of determining one's risk factors for obesity-related illness. BMI doesn't take into account body shape, cardiovascular level, or genetics, and not all fat is created equal. Instead, of unhealthy fat follows the real estate rule of location, location, location. Abdominal fat, for instance, is associated with greater risk for diseases, while fat stored on bottoms, thighs, hips, or upper arms does not carry the same risk factors. Carrying lower fat might actually help us combat cardiovascular disease. Fatter thighs are linked to lower risks of metabolic syndrome, a cluster of risk factors that include raised blood pressure and high triglycerides. Such findings have led some doctors to believe that liposuction of these areas might increase one's risk for heart disease. But in general, when body fat increases, often so do muscle mass and strength necessary in battling chronic disease. This leads to the essential divide between being fat and being fat and fit. Weight and metabolic health are imperfectly correlated, though a quarter of obese people are metabolically unhealthy, nearly the same percentage of normal people are also similarly unhealthy. He cites two studies, one out of Canada and one conducted by the American Cancer Society, both of which say unequivocally that the more you sit, no matter your age or weight, the sooner you'll die. If you have to choose between being fat or fit, go for fit, even if it means being heavier, he writes. A study released in December by Curtin University in Australia, not included in the book, supports these assumptions. Researchers followed 8,662 people over 15 years and found that exercising significantly reduced mortality, even in those with large waists and high cholesterol levels. Many heavier people with more body fat who remain as active as possible throughout the day can be fitter and healthier than thin people who sit all day. Fat or skinny, the worst thing you can do is sit still. Oh, gosh. So I thought that was kind of... But these ideas get started, you know, that you're fat and you're unhealthy. And so therefore, if you're thin and you're going to live longer, or somehow you're not going to die. And I don't know, there's so many of these, they study this and they study that, and, oat bran's good for you, no, oat bran's bad for you, coffee's good for you, coffee's bad for you, so on and so forth, and what do you, you know, it's all contradictory, you know, and I don't know. I think it is a good idea to probably walk. I know people go way overboard on the exercise thing, and the people that are out jogging and what have you, all they're really doing is probably destroying their joints. So walking, I enjoy walking. The problem that I have is that I don't have time, and it's dangerous to try to walk around in a truck stop parking lot. You get run over. If you do that very much, eventually somebody'd run over you. And don't have time to do it anyway. And then like tonight is a really good example. It's almost midnight here. It's after midnight here. It's pushing 1 o'clock. 1 a.m. in the morning, I'm not going to get out and walk in a truck stop parking lot. And besides that, it's cold. It's supposed to get down to 29 degrees and the wind's blowing. Not going to happen. But I don't know. You just have to use your common sense, but, you know, people are so programmed and they're so suggestible, and these ideas get pounded in people's heads that this is good for you, or this is bad for you, and so on and so forth, and these ideas just get pounded in people's heads to the point where they can't think for themselves. And even like with these studies, you know, they said, well, we keep consistently getting these results, but people were rejecting it because it's somehow it goes against the popular meme that you have to be thin and so on and so forth. And if you're thin, you're going to be healthier. And that's not necessarily true. So, but I don't know. It's kind of a who knows. But you just have to. You have to use your own common sense. You know, you really do. Oops, phone. Well, I just got the phone here. I looked to see if my video had uploaded, and it has. And so when I grabbed it, that's what caused that static. It was just the phone itself communicating with the network. Let's see here. So I had made myself a note or two here. So let me open those up here on the phone. Okay. All right. So there's this idea. Have you ever heard the phrase, you know, not a care in the world? And somehow there's an idea that if you didn't have to work and you could just sit on a beach or something, just lay on a beach somewhere or some sort of a fantasy type thing and not have a care in the world, and somehow you'd be happy because you wouldn't care. Well, that's a fallacy. And the reason being is you should be, ideally you should be able to live in the real world, because that's kind of a fantasy. You can do that for a few days, you know, a day or an afternoon, you know, you lay on the beach or whatever, but you can't live your life that way. You know, what kind of a life is that? If you can live in the real world, you can, if you have the right attitude and the right relationship with the world and with your creator, you don't have a care in the world. You know, and what makes you have a care? You know, is it the cares that, are the cares making you unhappy? And, you know, if so, you know, why do you care? You know, I hear people say, well, I'm not going to care anymore. Well, they're enslaved to those cares. You know, they're forced to care. Whether they like it or not, you know, people are forced to care. And, you know, you're caring about what? You're caring about other people. You're caring about the groupthink. It's primarily groupthink that people are forced to care. They're enslaved to the groupthink. They're forced to care and they're miserable. So if you have the right relationship, then you don't have to care anymore. What forces you to care? You resent. And then you run from conscience, because as soon as you, resentment is a sin. Resentment, that is judgment, that's a sin. Playing God in your own mind is a sin. Whether you like that or not, it's a sin. That causes you to become enemies with your conscience, and then you have to start driving a wedge between yourself and your conscience and distancing yourself, you know, trying, you know, and that forces you into the arms of the group. And that forces you to embrace groupthink as a means to distance yourself from your conscience. And that conscience is the only thing that can save you when it comes right down to it. And you look at it as some kind of a guilty thing that you should run away from. So, you're forced to care, whether you like it or not. You have to care. You have to care because you're running away from conscience, and you won't let go, you know. And then on the other hand, you won't let go of the resentment. You deny that you even have it, or you try to be proud of it, and you have a pride march. You know, there's different kind of, you know, there's different ways of trying to be proud of what you've turned into, of what it's turned you into, what you become. You know, abortion pride march. There's other kind of, you know, labor pride. You're mad because you have to work, you know, and you're a labor union. Got the labor union group thing going on. And, you know, and everybody's, you know, kind of like in the group, I'm okay, you're okay. You know, and you have your own special little language that develops. So, you're forced to care, and that's why, you know, and so there's this idea, well, if you could just get away from it. You know, what are you getting away from? The problem is it's inside your head. You can't get away from it. You know, go try sitting on the beach. See if you can escape it. You know, maybe you can distract yourself for a little while. But it always comes back. And you can't get away from it. So the proper way to deal with it is to face it. Face your conscience. So, and, you know, become objective. You know, and be able to recognize that you resent. And stop hiding it from yourself. Stop defending it. I mention it once in a while. If you go to my website, truckertompodcast.com, up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. There's MP3 files that I have hosted on my server. Download them. Put them on your iPod or your iPhone or your whatever phone you have, your Android phone. Burn them to CD, listen to them on your computer, however you want to do it. They will stream them. They will teach you a very simple meditation technique. And that technique, the idea, that's not going to save you. The meditation is not going to save you. However, the meditation, if you learn to do it and you have to persist with it, it's not, you know, one time you're not going to just do it one time and everything's going, you're going to feel better and then stop, and then, you know, that won't get it. You know, if you get relief, and, you know, if you get relief the first time you try it, and I do believe most people will, if they'll really try it, If you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. You know, don't come up with all kinds of cockamamie excuses as to why you can't. You know, because I've had people say, well, I tried that and it puts me to sleep. Well, have a nice nap and try again. You know, it's up to you. You know, do you really want to become objective? Do you really want to find your creator, or are you just paying it lip service? That's really what it comes down to. It's up to you. If you want to find the real answers, you have to have the want to. And if you don't, be just, you know, keep making your excuses. I don't really care. I really don't. But that's on my website. Give it a try. And but that will bring you, if you learn how to meditate properly, that will bring you to the point of being objective. And if you can become objective to all of your problems and so on and so forth, if you can really become objective, that's where you'll find your creator. God is not in the future. God is not in the past. God is in the ever-present now moment. And that's the only place where he is. That's it. And if you're lost in your thoughts, whatever we as human beings are, we have this point of awareness. If we're sort of lost in a squirrel cage of thoughts that just go around and around and around and never resolve, God's not there. You have to learn how to become objective. And it's not an instant process. It you know, this idea you're going to be instantly saved and so on, that, you know, that's, I don't know who came up with that. You know, some preachers have come up with that, who knows how many years ago. And I think that's a crock. You know, you're saved from this, saved from sin? Well, then what do? You go on sinning. Well, I thought you were saved from it. You know, and it that doesn't even make any sense. It's not an instant process. It's not going to just be something you're going to, you know, prayer that they've all agreed that you say this prayer, and it's not in the Bible anywhere. You know, they quote different scriptures and, you know, John 3:16, blah, blah, blah. And they'll tell you, you pray this and you so on and so forth, and you're going to be saved and you're saved. And that's just groupthink. Sorry, I'm stepping on people's toes. That's just groupthink. People don't even understand the Bible, that even if they read it, they don't understand. You know, it's people don't understand it. Because the meaning behind it, there's some really delicate meanings behind it. So the idea is that you read it or listen to it, and it awakens understanding within you. And I'm sorry if you can't, to some people it's like I'm just uttering words and they're having their knee-jerk reaction to the words, and they think that I'm, you know, having some communion or something, and, you know, and they think I'm off in la-la land. Well, have at it. I don't care what you think. I don't care because I don't have to care. I don't have a care in the world. And I'm not on a beach somewhere. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. See if I can get headed to bed. Hope everyone has had a great weekend, or has had, because I guess we're sort of in the middle of the weekend, so you still have Sunday to go, maybe. So I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.